Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Robert, we could start with Cody, but that would be so cliche. So let's talk about what Raw ended with, which was an angle with the Usos and RK-Bro. With apparently we're on the verge, as we kind of figured out last Friday night, of a potential unification of the Raw and SmackDown tag team titles. I think they've done a nice job making the match feel like a big deal. RK-Bro are big names on Raw. They've been given a big push. They're popular. The Usos, obviously part of the Bloodline, longest reigning SmackDown tag team champions. It feels like a pretty big tag match when you look at the last handful of years. I don't know how far I have to go back in WWE to come up with something that's kind of in this category. How do you feel about how big the match feels, first of all, and then second of all, just the idea of potentially unifying the tag titles? What does that mean, and do you like it?
I like it on a couple levels, just for the general argument that there is too many titles and it's hard to keep track of, and the lack of death and all those things that I think we can generally underline. And it seems to me, 1 week out, like that's the main event storyline on Raw. Like, if you're going to have the singles champion, and he's going to be mostly relegated to SmackDown, which he was even in the Brock Lesnar feud, the piece of that they're taking over to Raw is the tag team championships. And as you said, I mean, it's been forever since the main event of a show was really, and not just the main event of an individual show, but the main event program was the tag team titles. And I think this rises to the level, as you said. I mean, if Roman's the most over guy on SmackDown, Orton and Riddle have been the most over act on Raw. So it kind of makes sense to put it in that position. They don't have a lot of history with doing this, so we kind of have to wait and see where they're going. But I kind of like the way it's playing out. And the entirety of that Raw tag team division is involved in it as well. You know, you had Ford and Dawkins be a part of this tonight. You had the Alpha Academy guys be a part of this. So this is a big storyline revolving around the tag team division, something that's refreshing to see, even if we don't see it that often.
What do you think is going to happen? Who's going to win? Are they going to unify the belts? Are they teasing us with the idea of unifying the belts, but they're really not, because they're going to end up taking one of the belts off of Roman at some point anyway? And this is just trying to give a boost of interest to Backlash, and ultimately there'll be some sort of non-finish? Or do you think they're going to go ahead and unify these, and does that indicate they're just going to have floating champions in at least the men's singles and men's tag division, and perhaps eventually the women?
Well, I think those are a couple of different things. I do think they are going to unify the titles, because I don't think at the place they're at with Roman Reigns, they don't want him to be a character that makes a promise and doesn't deliver on it. I think that's kind of in the bigger scheme of things of the direction that they're headed into. And as you said, boosting Backlash as well with this really big match. Now, with that said, I do believe they are going to unify, and there'll be a period of unification. But as we all know, there's really nothing stopping them from de-unifying these titles. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be with people losing. We've seen in the past they could just create a title for a new show. So I wouldn't put any finality or any, like, you know, this is the new direction of the company. I could just see that being a quick fix. I think that would fit their tendencies.
Oh, what is your bet, honestly? Like, do you think they do split them off? I mean, I know you're sort of saying it doesn't guarantee they'll unify them and keep them unified, but is your hunch that they will unify them at least for a while and then break them up again? Or you know, in other words, 2-3 months from now, where are we as far as this goes?
I think they will keep them unified for a short period of time. And I think the luxury you get with it is, unlike having to beat Roman to take one of his titles off of him, you can beat the Usos to take this title off of them if that is the case. So I think it's going to be a very short-term thing. They're going to do it to whatever fits this Bloodline storyline, and then undo it in whichever way it fits the Bloodline storyline. So I think it's going to be, you know, my non-answer here, a kind of a little bit of both. I think they're going to go for a little while, but eventually they always end up splitting these titles up, as long as you have two shows. And I don't think that's ending anytime soon. I don't know if there's any indication of an actual end to the brand split. As long as you're going to have the two shows, they're probably eventually going to go back to the multiple titles. It's, you know, such a booking crutch. I don't think they would now suddenly be that disciplined to do something like that.
As far as another angle this can go, it's the Usos let down Roman. They don't win. and they don't bring the belts back. And that turns into a sort of a storyline of the summer or a storyline of April and May or something like that. So I throw that out there as a possibility too, because it was like Roman sort of sending them on a mission, and Roman's been disappointed in them before. So I include that as a possibility. It doesn't mean that the belts end up unified. It could mean other people interfere and it leads to a contest and Roman still feels let down, or RK-Bro win the belts from the Usos and unify them, and it doesn't end up with the Bloodline. There's a lot of things that still serve the Bloodline storyline or change the dynamic with Reigns and the Usos that doesn't necessarily involve the Usos winning. So just throw that out there. I don't think it's a given how this plays out if it goes the direction of being centered around the Bloodline.
Right, and then we have to remember, too, I think the narrative for the last week on just about every wrestling podcast you listen to is that there's not a lot of challenges right now for Roman Reigns. So
No.
He needs to be occupied with something. And I don't think, like you said, if it's just the straight up win the title and that's the end of it, that really wouldn't be something for him to be occupied with. This is, you know, part of that larger storyline. He's a guy that, you know, doesn't wrestle regularly on TV, so you can keep him occupied with this for a while. So I you know, there are possibilities, which why I think the benefit of doing this is there are many different ways you can go about this. And unlike a lot of things lately, it doesn't feel like as much of a foregone conclusion.
How do you feel the Street Profits are either being benefiting or being damaged by the way that they've been incorporated into this? Because they've been sort of heelish in the way that they inserted themselves into the WrestleMania situation. And then tonight they, you know, come out there and talk a lot and then come up short. How do they come out of this?
So I don't think they come out of this better necessarily, but I do think one thing we can gain from this is that little bit of that serious edge to them has really done them well, I think, over the course of the last month, whenever this is picked up, that, you know, that, like you said, sort of flirting with that heel line and then going back from it. I don't think ultimately any of this is really about them, though. So I don't know if they really get a benefit off of it. I think this goes to serve that other storyline. So they could end up being casualties in this. But I do think some of the character changes we're getting from this may be a benefit that plays out in other ways.
And let's round it out, and I'll just throw to you for thoughts on Alpha Academy. And what do you think of them? It's been a while since we've done a show together, and I have become even more of a fan of Otis and Chad Gable. I think Chad Gable coming out and complaining about Gable Steveson and saying he might be a gold medalist, but I have a gold medal mind. And I mean, I enjoy Gable so much, and Otis just is a perfect compliment, contrasting compliment to him. And they're just really entertaining in the ring. They're very different in terms of their wrestling style. Yet I'm a fan of tag teams that aren't, you know, the old term from the 90s, bookend tag teams. I'm a fan of contrasting tag teams instead of the fabulous ones through the Usos. I liked, you know, the East-West connection with Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis. Very different types of wrestlers. And so it's fun. And I think they're being treated seriously, even if they're not at the top level. They are competing with top level teams. They're getting TV time. And if they don't win, that's fine. Some people have to be better than others. But I just think this is a much better position for Chad Gable than, a year ago, you know, whatever, pick your any time, really, compared to where, you know, Shorty Gable was. And then Otis, you know, it seems like they're testing him for singles, but I think he's probably better off in this type of tag team. I think it's a little bit pushing him a little. I don't want to say I'm pausing because I don't think you're pushing him too hard by pushing him as singles. I just don't know if he's ideally a singles wrestler. I just think he's better in a tag team. So those are my kind of thoughts on them, and I think it's made the tag team more entertaining, both on the mic and in the ring. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm largely in agreement with you there. I think there's times when the promo segments or the segments they've done with RK-Bro can go a little long and be a little grating. But just in the vacuum, you know, where they come out, cut the promo, heel on the crowd, and do their thing, I think that has been largely effective because Gable is very good at that. You know, he's been compared to Kurt Angle literally since he came in. But there was he was never really put in that position. Not saying that he's put in Kurt Angle's position where he's main evented against Brock necessarily, but as sort of that type of character and his own version of it and his own delusions of it and calling out Gabe Steveson and all that, I really think that's working. And Otis, I mean, there was potential in Otis, I think, as a singles, but that unfortunately coincided in the pandemic era of the empty arena show. So I don't know what was there to be gained off of that. And it's they're finally doing it with both these guys where, yes, they're silly, but it's not necessarily that we are making fun of them in the way that, as you said, the Shorty G character was, or like the Otis that just ate a bunch of meat. That was something that, yeah, might be entertaining for a good laugh here or there. But now you are laughing at them because, you know, because they're these evil fools. And I think that's a much better spot for them. And there can be, you know, mid-card tag teams. And I'm not saying necessarily that's what they are, but and that's part of the benefit. If you do expand the tag team division out a little bit, you can have people that are not necessarily the top serious guys, as you said. Like, you can almost guarantee if there's going to be a big multi-person match, probably one of them taking the fall. But as you said, you need that role. And I think that, you know, they fill it well as long as, you know, say when something like this is over, there's still kind of something for them to do.
Yeah, yep, I agree. All right, let's pause. We got a lot more to talk about, but let's pause and introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, April 11th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch brand. That includes our original format, the paper copy Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which we're still publishing every week and mailing out to our subscribers worldwide. And also our website, pwtorch.com, which we launched in 1999. And also now big into podcasting, in fact, dating back almost 20 years. We're going to be celebrating our 20th anniversary of podcasting next year. And you can dive into our archives if you're a VIP member. Of course, we are here free with multiple new shows on our red feed and blue feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. That's our red logo show. And the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, our blue logo show. The post shows are our live streams following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, along with some best of shows sprinkled in throughout the week. And our Blue Logo Show features our weekly flagship, along with some interviews, some roundtable pay-per-view previews, and flashbacks also, and occasionally other formats. So if you are not subscribing to our Blue Logo Show, in addition to this, just search Wade Keller and click subscribe to both. While you're at it, search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe to our new PW Torch VIP podcast feed, which is free, but you get one in the sense that you get one free sample VIP show each week on that feed. You can also upgrade to a VIP membership, multiple ways to do it. And now if you're using the native podcast app on iPhone, you can actually subscribe within that PW Torch VIP podcast feed and just with your Apple account, Face ID, click the side button, and you're in. It's pretty frictionless to get access to all of our VIP podcasts throughout the week with your Apple account. You can also subscribe at Patreon, patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. And also, as we've done forever, PWTorch.com/GoVIP gives you our home-based sign-up form where you can use a credit card, debit card, or PayPal. And when you sign up that way, you not only can subscribe on podcast apps on Android and iOS, but also gain access to our ad-free VIP website and our archives. So if you're looking to expand your listening of the ability to listen to all of our podcast lineup, check out membership. If you subscribe, by the way, using your Apple account on an iPhone, you get a 3-day free trial. So you can kind of kick the tires and sample some shows and see if anything jumps out that causes you to for sure want to stay and stick around. All right. So with that business out of the way, let me introduce tonight's co-host, and that is Robert Vallejos. Robert, how's it going?
It is going fantastic, Wade. I'm glad to be on. It's been about a month since I've been on here, so it's good to be back on.
It's great to have you back. The podcast that you host is also available when people search PW Torch, because when people search PW Torch, two logos show up, the black logo, the PW Torch VIP podcast feed, which you get, as I said, one free sample a week, and then the ability to subscribe to all of them if you're using the iPhone podcast app. The other logo that pops up is the PW Torch Daily Cast, which features a real variety of weekly show, well, daily shows, but each of them are once a week on a different day of the week with different hosts covering different topics, such as ROH, AEW, and more. So I won't run through all the shows, but Robert, I will throw to you to plug your show, which focuses on, not exclusively, but primarily on the world of MMA.
Right. So every Monday night or Monday evening or afternoon, depending on when we can get it out, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, hosted by myself and our co-host Rick Monsey, with occasional drop-ins by guys like Zach Haydorn on there. And what we do is we primarily talk MMA, but we talk MMA in the same fashion that we would talk pro wrestling as we do on this show. We focus on a lot of the aesthetics, a lot of the business end of it, a lot of the intriguing matchups. And we will talk about the technical stuff of MMA, but we like to keep it on that level, absorbing it more as an entertainment product than necessarily a sports product. And we like to have a little fun, keep it a little light. We're a good entry point. If you don't know that much about MMA, I think we're a good, good place for the casual fans. And we do like to sneak in a little wrestling talk, usually at the end or around WrestleMania week. It'll go up a little bit. And I do believe yesterday I noted that we are tied with Rich Fan as the longest running daily cast in its original form. I kind of made that stat up yesterday, but I checked. It is true. So I'm just going to go ahead and run with it.
I like that you're keeping track of that. And run with it. Congratulations.
WWE would do so. Remember, they used to have those facts, the did you know? Or they finally pulled something out today with their Super Bowl engagement or whatever. I feel like that was my version of that.
I love it. I love it. All right, very good. A quick social media plug. You can follow us on Twitter at PW Torch. You can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. We also happen to be on Facebook at PW Torch. So facebook.com/PW Torch. You can follow us there. Robert, any social media you want to plug?
Sure. First of all, if you want to email our show, I should have got that in earlier, MMALivecast@gmail.com, MMALivecast@gmail.com. And if you want to follow me on my personal Twitter account, on Robert Vallejos at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos.
Very good. All right. Now, if you're live streaming our show, thank you for doing that. And we invite you to call and participate in the conversation. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you want to be on the show when you call, push 1. Otherwise, you can just call and listen. If that's easier for you than streaming it through your device, we'll bring you onto the show. You can also email the show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch. And we, by the way, we're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday within about 5 minutes or so of the show's ending. You can find the live stream link at the top and bottom of my reports covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Again, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night at our main website, pwtorch.com. PW Torch is packed with news on a daily basis, live TV, live pay-per-view coverage, special features. Make it a home screen button on your phone, bookmark it on your laptop, and check it out. Settle in and read some good wrestling reporting and commentary and coverage from a wide array of experienced voices. And the other way to find links is at PW Torch on Twitter. I almost always tweet out a link to our live stream near the end of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. So that's another way to do it. And then finally, you can just navigate by going to WadeKellerPostShow.com and navigate to the link to the live stream. So lots of ways to find us if you've been subscribing to our show and downloading it, but not listening live. Those are the ways for you to live stream the show. And that also gives you the opportunity to become a caller or at least hear our live reaction. Okay, so with all that business taken care of, let's get to phone calls and emails. Now, I'm going to shock people because I'm going to just start with an email. We usually save emails till the end, so just asking callers to be patient. We'll get to you, but I just want to shake this up a little bit so people who email don't always have to wait till the very end. And we'll go with one of our regulars, JB from Detroit, which is where Raw was tonight, says, oh, and by the way, we have 2 or 3 on-site correspondents planning to give us a call as soon as they get settled in after the show tonight. So we should get some good perspectives from people in the building. So stay tuned for that too. But JB says, why must all Cody promos devolve into some form of meta variant with terms like carny, the belt versus title, and wrestler versus superstar vernacular? I felt like we were in some backstage producers meeting. Number 2. I'm not sure how much longer Cody will remain a babyface in his current iteration. He's getting babyface reactions now because he's still very much new to what some would have considered a stale product. But to me, he's coming across as rather stiff and too full of himself. Didn't we need 2 elaborate entrances in 1 night after Miz had already made fun of that earlier in the night? Okay, so those are 2 Cody questions. He's got a couple others we'll get to separate. But Robert, this is a good gateway into some Cody talk. The first one is, how do you feel about the meta insider references? What are they going for? That is very on brand for Cody, but I was sort of looking forward to it being left behind when he got to WWE. Is this a case of he can't help himself? Is it a case of Vince McMahon thinks that's part of his brand and part of what makes him different. Well, what are they going for here?
I think they're going to do it intentionally because that is, as you said, it's kind of part of Cody's character. As a general rule of thumb, I can't stand when that stuff is on wrestling shows. I didn't mind this as much, and I think there's other examples of it, right? Like I thought a few weeks ago on Dynamite when Eddie Kingston did the same thing to Chris Jericho, I thought it kind of made Chris Jericho look like a fool when they had the what's a baby face little line on there. This was a little bit different because I think it was who it was being positioned against. It was being positioned against The Miz, WWE guy through and through. You know, as close of a representation as you get of a guy like John Cena right now. So I think that's what they're trying to create, that contrast. And I think it kind of goes back a little bit to what the emailer said is, you know, he's new, he's fresh. So I think part of the way that they're kind of trying to communicate that is by him doing these things. And again, we've seen these promos from him for years where he goes in this direction. I don't want this to become a part of his character, but I think as we are still in the honeymoon phase, as the emailer mentioned, as JB mentioned, I think it's okay for now, specifically within this feud.
Yeah, I think you're on to something when you say Miz is sort of the ultimate company guy, Mr. Reliable, and Cody is the new guy. And so we can look at this as I framed it in my question and as JB did in his email, which is playing into Cody doing meta, but it also sort of a convenient, coincidence that serendipity that that's Cody's gimmick, but it's something that might be working well for Cody playing off a Miz. Now there's baggage with me and others like JB, where I just think Cody's at his best when he's in the universe within the four walls, not breaking the fourth wall. I feel like when wrestlers do that, they're trying to get themselves over with an internet social media audience. Hey, look, he's talking our language. Now we love him. He's not one of those, you know, wrestlers who just sticks to the script. He's breaking script and we know what he's saying. He's talking to us. And I think that's actually patronizing. I think it was passé 15 years ago. And I think it doesn't work now if that is how it comes across. But in this context, it sort of is. They're talking about Cody being a free agent, and he hasn't been here for 6 years, and he was a free agent for X number of days. Well, free agent from what? They don't say. Cody almost invited an AEW chant at one point when he talked about where he's been. That did not break out in Detroit. They might not have chanced it in another city, certain other cities. But I think that it can come across as, yeah, Cody's the new guy who hasn't acclimated himself yet. The danger is, does this cause viewers who weren't thinking about it? They're not people listening to us point it out all the time. They're not super aware of it. It's sort of like, you know, if you look out, you know, if you drive your car every day and there's like, you know, a dead bug on the windshield off to the upper right, and then you never notice, and a passenger sits down and goes, oh, look at that. Now you can't not see it. It's in your peripheral vision. It's pointed out to you. And so our WWE viewers now thinking, oh, do they always say title or championship instead of belt? Is that a thing? And oh, it's superstar, not wrestler. Like, are you drawing attention to something that kind of is best left in the background, just sort of happening and not drawing attention to it? So unless Vince is insecure about the whole sports entertainment thing with Jericho when he's trying to loosen up and make fun of himself, which I'm not going to put money down on that, this could backfire a little bit. I don't think it's a big deal, but I think there's a bit of a risk that Miz as a heel becomes the face of corporate speak, and it's a heel tactic, and now everyone else who adheres to that also comes across as if they're just sort of, you know, corporate sports entertainer drones doing what they're supposed to do and not speaking naturally.
Who are these people that love the corporate speak that are going to cheer for the corporate speak, Wade?
I don't think anybody loves it. I don't think anyone's going to cheer for it. I'm worried that fans are going to start noticing it more and boo Miz.
Yeah.
See, they're going to boo Miz because he's pro corporate speak, but everyone else still has to do corporate speak. They're not dropping this. So when, you know, Bianca Belair is using corporate speak, or Randy Orton is using corporate speak, or, you know, pick your baby face on the roster, fans are going to be cognizant of it now and be like, well, why is Cody the only cool guy who doesn't just follow the rules like that?
That is true, but I think they've done this type of angle so many times that I think that cat is kind of out of the bag. And that's not a reason to do things. generally. But I think that's, you know, how many CM Punk promos over the year did they do that with the, you know, the wrestler superstar?
Am I allowed to say pro wrestler? Can I say pro wrestler? Ooh.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it was, I think that was more obnoxious then. Than this was now again, but the same way I say it with kind of rolling my eyes at CM Punk again, it can't be this guy's gimmick. It kind of has to stay right here. I fear that it might not though, because of if Cody's ascending up the card, you kind of see him going up against these guys that are very, you know, WWE tried and true. Like he's going up. In the big pay-per-view match, he's going up against the guy that, you know, when stuff was really going down in 2020, that defended WWE to a pretty ridiculous level on Twitter. And my fear is we're going to probably go there with this feud, and I don't want that to be the case.
Yep. Okay, so as far as what else JB had to say, is Cody on course to remain a babyface in the current iteration? And maybe more specifically, is airing Cody's ring entrance, his ostentatious, over-the-top ring entrance, as it has been accused of being in AEW, and a contributing factor potentially to him being booed. There could be other things at play here, too. Oh, I'm sure there are. Is that dangerous also? Like, are we already seeing signs of Cody kind of getting a fresh start, but devolving into some of the things that could actually cause a backlash?
I think those things, you can't take them in a vacuum. Like, if you watch the show tonight and listen, there was nearly zero backlash towards him. The people were into Cody, and I think they were into those things, you know, the opulence of that entrance. I think what happens in wrestling is when people change their mind, they change their mind, and they will kind of put these reasons to not like that stuff. As of right now, people do like that stuff, and that is still, I don't have a direct answer for that either, though, for what JB's asking, because that's still the thing with Cody is as good as all as everything I think he's been doing is in these first 2 weeks in the company, deep down inside we still do know it is still Cody, and you do know that there are those indulgences, and he, you know, still isn't the greatest wrestler in the world. That'll kind of cover up for that, so they have to be careful, but I wouldn't try to be so super conscious about it right off the bat. Week two, I don't think you necessarily need to be worrying about those things just yet. They need to be more reactionary than he was in AEW, for sure, when it started going down. I think that's the key there. It's not about, you know, kind of abandoning ship week two. It's, you know, after you tell, you know, get the weird promo that he gave and all that, and you kept leaning into it, that's when you start to get into more of a John Cena type of situation. That's what you would want to avoid.
I agree with you that they should keep their eye on this. I also agree that Cody isn't the flashiest of wrestlers. What'd you think of his match? I thought, I think the crowd's into Cody, but I don't think they're like rapidly, enthusiastically top star into Cody. Like Nick Varvatti and Tom Colley were talking about this, and I think Nick brought up, you know, WrestleMania. It's like, oh, Cody's over. You know, people like him, but it's not like just frenzied, oh my God, we love that this guy's back. And so people are chanting Cody, but there were a couple times where Cody was kind of like encouraging it to amplify it, and the fans are compliant, but they're not initiating it. And even Miz was sort of like, you know, doing his, you know, he's a pro out there, and here's an audience maybe about to do something that WWE wants them to do, and he knows how to sort of throw fuel on that fire, get it going a little louder. So what is your take on how over Cody is? Because I agree with you, fans are into him, but I don't think it's like, you know, when Punk came back to AEW and it was in Chicago, like it's a fraction of that.
Right. But I don't think they're apple to apple comparison either. Like until WWE created the buzz of Cody coming back, there was no buzz about that. People have been chanting CM Punk's name in arenas for 6 years or whatever prior to his return. So I don't think it's the same thing. I do think Cody will start falling into being more of just a regular character on the show as this wears off. But I never have an issue with wrestlers doing the sort of parlor tricks to get the chance. If they're not, as you said, the Uber over, if they're not just, you know, a guy that comes out there and they're just going to be wildly cheered. There hasn't been a lot to go off of yet of the character. So anything that that's happening right now is going to just be the intro stuff. So I think largely we're still in the intro phase. I wasn't blown away by the match with The Miz, but that's like an evergreen statement I think I could just make on every post-show.
I was thinking as you were saying it. Yes, exactly.
I do think, though, he was probably a good first – like I think I would be much more down on it if – and I hate to feed into your narrative here, but if it was someone like Ziggler. Because, you know, it would have gone – it would have gone 20 minutes. There would have been a whole bunch of kickouts. It would, you know, it would have turned into this thing, and each guy would have been, you know, kind of devalued at the end. Now, the maybe the negative part of it, I don't know, take this a negative or a positive. Like, I've always viewed Cody and Miz in a similar light, like just kind of that OVW era guys that wrestle that type of match. So the match didn't blow me away. It was also, you know, inoffensive as a match. Other than I tonight was a big thing, especially later on. These commercial breaks during the matches, they just really, you know, kind of take everything down a not a notch. But yeah, this didn't blow me away, but also wasn't like, you know, some kind of career killing match either.
Yeah, it was interesting putting him against Miz early. You know, a steady, reliable hand in the ring. But not someone who's going to create a lot of movement, like, you know, astutely point out, Dolph Ziggler would have. You know, Dolph would have created more movement and more athleticism in the ring. And that's going to be, something for – I think Cody is self-aware. You know, I think that's why he did blood and gimmick matches and violence and did kind of offbeat stuff in AEW. I think there was a certain level of – you could frame it as insecurity, or you could frame it as self-awareness and strategic marketing. And it might be, you know, a combination of both, or one prompted the other, that he knew, you know, I'm not going to be able to go out there and do what some of these other younger, more athletic, more athletically gifted wrestlers than Cody ever was at any age, but also currently much more athletically gifted. But Cody's good old school. That was a fundamentally sound match. Everything they did counted for something. And I do think Cody is a craftsman when it comes to that out of, you know, necessity, but he's not lost out there. He knows how to tell the story and engage fans. But yeah, Miz isn't the flashiest of debut Raw matches for him. And so, yeah, we'll keep watching Cody on this journey.
Well, we have to note, though, I want to note just real quick on that too, is
yeah,
it's also going to be difficult for him, because he, in his previous iteration, didn't have to wrestle on a 3-hour show. And I think his style, that'll have some difficulty on these really long shows in that way, where, you know, guys like the Rollins and the Zigglers of the world can hold your attention a little bit more in those situations.
Yeah. Yep. So JB leaves the Cody topic with a couple other brief things here. One, was there a decision in that Damian Priest, AJ Styles match? Unless I missed it, there was literally no mention made of an outcome. That was so dumb. I mean, it just, I do not like when WWE devalues matches by having the match end. And it's one thing that, you know, non-finishes are going to happen, like non-pinfall submission kind of finishes are going to happen, but acknowledge it, mourn it. It should be a big deal that these two fought for 10 minutes, give or take. Anytime wrestlers battle it out and then there's no finish, you've got to own that. And you should act like that's part of what's upsetting about what happened, why the lights went out, and explain it. Like, the referee called off the match. Why? Why not just continue it after the break? Is there a rule that when lights go out and somebody kneels in the ring, that then AJ Styles can't get back in the ring and continue the match and try to win? Like, it just was dumb. It wasn't explained. It isn't really a thing to just have a match end because the lights get commandeered by Edge or some paid-off producer or magic. So I didn't like that at all, and they did not acknowledge it. I'm glad Styles was upset about it. I thought it was a step in the right direction. It placated me a little that at least they interviewed Styles and he was upset about it. But, you know, come on. That's just it feels like desperate bells and whistles trying to get Priest over. And I think Edge isn't helping himself with all the special lighting and his character. And now, you know, Priest just is added to it. So, Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, and that was what was frustrating. I feel like they were aware of that criticism. And so they tried these little things to sort of weasel out of it by doing the post match promo right away with AJ and all that, but no, this was just weird. And it's something that you've talked about before, is sometimes you have to be aware of the scar tissue that's there. Like, we just went through 3 years of The Fiend and this stuff just, you know, kind of derailing the show. Yeah, and all that happened. So you have to be cognizant of that when it's happening. And even when it went down, I was like,
like, oh no, did they kidnap AJ? Is that where we're going? Like, I honestly thought that's where we're going. And I was, I'll admit, there was a good match, but at that exact moment, I was looking at something in my iPad, and I thought I completely missed something because it was so perplexing like that. But as you said, the commentary needs to frame things. Outside of occasionally from Saxton, the commentators are never mad at heels on this show. They are just perfectly accepted to be, you know, the stenographers there, you know, just documenting what's going on and not showing any anger whatsoever at anything a heel does. And I don't even know if this is, you know, obviously it's supposed to be a heel, but it's not even – turning off the lights isn't exactly, you know, the most nefarious thing in the world.
Totally agree. All right, he also says, what a terrible way to introduce Tommaso Ciampa. Make him look like an idiot, not say anything in the form of a mission statement or substance. Yeah, this isn't – I mean, I'm not going to overreact to how they're using Ciampa. Ciampa he's been around a long time. He's not the future of WWE. He's on the main roster. He has a chance now to make more money and become more of a national name. But it does seem like he's being defined down pretty early. And, you know, you'd think they'd be able to get a few months out of him seeming like a bigger deal arriving on the main roster, celebrating his accomplishments in NXT and treating him like a bigger deal. Cause I think Tommaso Ciampa is at his best when he is framed as a big deal and he can present himself that way. And now he's sort of just a guy roaming around backstage, not really giving mission statements. And it's sort of like, well, you either know him or you don't, but we're not going to introduce him to you. So I don't want to overreact to it. Cause I don't think it's like completely, he's lost all value and there's no hope, but it's not a particularly encouraging start, Robert.
Right, he's got a lot working against him, like right up there. This is like, what, his third debut on Raw or something like that? Like, so it's not like, you know, he's this guy that's never been seen in the vicinity of any of these guys. Again, he's not the biggest guy. I don't think I'll be mean by saying this. He's not the prettiest guy in the world. So, you know, he has a lot of these things working against him. He can talk, though, and that was kind of frustrated about tonight, is, you know, him not being able to say anything really and getting cut off with the Ezekiel and Owen stuff. Now, for a minute, it's like him and Owens were in each other's orbit, so I thought, okay, that might be something to at least look forward to down the road. But he's going to be in the lower card, I think, here pretty quickly. I mean, the other thing, and I don't know if I mentioned earlier, is he's a 1.0 guy also. So those guys are not necessarily – I think the remnants of that are going to be high on the list on the main roster these days.
He is only 36, by the way, too. So when I say he's not the future of WWE, he's like Cody's age. I mean, like, if they want to treat him as a big deal, they can. And they're choosing not to. How old was AJ when he came into WWE? I mean, around that age? So
38, 39, I feel like. So
He was even late 30s. So, yeah, I mean, they absolutely could do more. And by the way, Ciampa's really good, and I think he has a chance to win Vince over and become not an AJ Styles level, but I think something pretty an important upper role player in WWE, and that's not the worst thing. Okay, finally, JB just has a comment. He said, it's also funny how WWE keeps bragging about how Mania outpaced the Super Bowl in terms of social media interactions. Well, yeah, Mania was two nights instead of one and probably more than double the length of time of the Super Bowl. I will say this, in defense of WWE, if WrestleMania is three nights and it outdoes the Super Bowl in social media, and even if you have, you know, wrestlers who are a lot more active on social media under the umbrella than, say, the NFL does officially under the umbrella, have their players, and there's all kinds of things working in their favor, if I can find a way to sort of honestly brag about that, I'll do it. I mean, if I'm WWE, even if people go, there's an asterisk because it was two nights and this, that, and the other thing, it's still pretty impressive. It's the freaking Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know how much you need to pump that out there. Like, you know, that's something more for an investor call than I think you need to feed the alleged bots on Twitter or whatever. But if you're going to get the win over the NFL, however manipulated it might be, you're probably gonna be proud of it, and that is fairly impressive. It's impressive, I think, you know, on a macro scale. But when you think about you think about your typical NFL fan and how online they are, and when I think of a wrestling fan and how online they are, then I don't know if that's that impressive. But it's all relative. It's to somebody who's gonna, you know, pay money for that audience down the road. That's who that stat is for.
Yes. All right, so let's go to our first caller here. And I believe it's an on-site correspondent who attended the show tonight. Grant, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Wade. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
All right. Yep, I'm just leaving, getting out of traffic right now. It was pretty decent show. Nice size crowd. Probably I'd say probably about 90% full, even though they were moving some people around. Anything particular you want to know?
So tell us what happened after Ron went off the air, the angle, after the tag match.
Right after the tag match, Roman Reigns came out, and they had advertised versus Drew. They had advertised him versus Drew one-on-one, but it turned into a six-man. Like, they announced it as a six-man, like that's what the advertised match was, which is kind of a theme today. Like, everything they advertised to us, they didn't give to us. They gave us a different variation of it, or not at all.
Yeah, explain, go into detail on what happened there.
So it ended up being a six-man with Drew and New Day versus the Bloodline. Roman basically stayed outside the ring the entire match. Paul Heyman, I mean, it went maybe about 25 minutes, though. They gave him a lot of time.
Oh, wow.
Xavier was outside the ring clowning around with a Detroit Macho Man. I'm sure you might be a little familiar with him.
Yep.
Let's see. Yeah. Paul Heyman challenged some guy that he said was a Samoa Joe lookalike to a fight. That was pretty funny. What else? Yeah, so it ended with Roman finally coming in, getting in the ring, giving three Superman punches, and then Drew giving him a Claymore, and then giving one of the Usos a Claymore for the win.
Tell me about the crowd reaction for, say, Drew McIntyre compared to Cody. To me, that's interesting because Drew left for a few years and then came back to WWE and has been a top guy. And they're similar age. I think Drew's 36 also. And Cody is back, but he's newer. And I'm just curious what the difference was in the crowd reaction to the two of them.
It was close, but by the time Drew came out, a lot of the crowd had left. Like, you could hear like people. Like telling their kids, like, oh yeah, you got school in the morning, and you know, like people left. So it wasn't as loud as Cody, but it was similar. Like Cody's probably lasted longer, and he had the advantage of, you know, having a come out first, so he got to see
early. First and second.
So that helped, but it wasn't far off. But yeah, Cody, you could tell like it's like, hey, he's new, it's fresh, and like I said, then he came on earlier in the show, so I nothing to be discouraged for Drew about for sure. He still got a good reaction.
Tell me a little more about the Cody reaction. And you know, I was saying it's not exactly like CM Punk in Chicago for AEW, where it was like, oh my God, you know, Punk is back, we're so excited. Cody didn't have that relationship with the fans, never has, but he has had a few years away from WWE being framed as a big star, but in front of smaller audiences than WWE draws for Raw and SmackDown. So what was your take? Because watching on television, it's hard for me to evaluate, but to me it seemed like some fans were really into him, and others thought, I know this guy, but I'm not sure he's a big deal, and I don't have an emotional investment in him yet. And so I'm kind of curious what you think that kind of dynamic or that ratio is of that, the reaction in the building.
If I would have to, you're almost dead on. It was a little bit of that, like, oh, okay, I'm going to cheer him because everybody else cheering him. But it was probably like 70% people that really liked Cody and 30 that were not really sure, but they just were joining in because, like, okay, everybody else cheering them, so I'm going to cheer them. So it made it he got a good reaction for sure, and it was a sustained reaction. So that, I mean, like if I'm him, it's a good sign. But, I mean, in 2019, he was getting these kind of reactions at AEW, too, and it just kind of drove the fans in the other direction. But I think I think the WWE setting is good for him because they'll kind of rein him in on some of the bad ideas he might have.
Exactly, yes. Well, you know, let me throw to Robert. Robert, what do you want to ask Guevara on Psycho Response?
Yeah, I was curious, similarly to how the Bobby Lashley segment came across in person. On TV, it seemed to be kind of up and down. They were wanting him initially. There seemed to be a little bit more interest when MVP came around. And then the destruction of the set kind of didn't really seem like it came off the way it was supposed to. What was the reaction like to that segment in the building?
It came off kind of clunky a little bit. You know, Lashley kind of stumbled over a couple lines, but he picked it back up. But when he initially came out, I don't know if that was before they went to break or how it came off you, but when he came out, he got a good reaction. So that was a plus. But the actual segment itself, it was, like I said, like you said, up and down is a good way to describe it. Like I said, a little clunky, but I mean, nobody like went to go use a bathroom or anything. At least they kept everybody's attention.
And quickly too, I was curious about the segment with Bianca and Sonya. Were there kind of murmurs about someone else it could be as her potential opponent, or did the building seem to kind of see it coming from far away that Sonya was going to be the opponent?
Okay, a lot of people were saying off the top, just like I was. I was like, yeah, it's Sonya. She's going to make herself. But you did hear a few people saying, oh, what if Bayley come back tonight? And then it was a lot of people kept saying Asuka. So I did hear a lot of that. But, like, I caught Sonya off the top when she didn't want to show Adam Pearce her sign. I mean, it's like it was too obvious. That's another thing, though. Bianca is really over. Like, she was easily the most popular person tonight.
Interesting. Talk a little bit more about that. Was it just for entrance, or was it things she was saying that popped the crowd?
No, like even they were just showing like video packages, or and like when they were going through the, like they showed like the top 10 WWE Instagram photos, the photo with her, Sasha, and Naomi. That got a big reaction. It was a video of her just talking, got a huge reaction, and then when she came out, she got a huge reaction. Like it wasn't even close. She was easily the most popular person tonight.
Along those lines, talk about the top reactions of the night. So you got Bianca at number one, but you've also got Drew and Cody getting a good response. Where did, say, Bobby Lashley fit in, Naomi, RK-Bro, trying to think who I'm forgetting, if anybody, of significance. I mean, Dominic isn't going to be top tier. So, yeah, just kind of rank, you know, the top tier of responses and add, you know, Lashley into that ranking.
So, like, Bianca will be one. Cody probably will be two. And Drew, three. Roman Reigns probably is four. And then... Then probably a notch down from that, you got Bobby. RK-Bro, I take it back. RK-Bro and Roman probably tied for four. But RK-Bro, they didn't get, like, last time they were in town, RK-Bro got a huge reaction coming out. Their reaction wasn't as big this time, but during, like, the breaks and during the match, like, people were going nuts for Randy, and Riddle was even pumping the crowd up, like, during the break. Y'all, probably it was during the had a commercial, and the crowd was going nuts for Randy. Like, as a matter of fact, during the segment when Sonya and Adam Pearce were talking, you couldn't hear a word he was saying because Riddle had the whole crowd chanting Randy.
What were the commercial breaks like for you as a fan in the building for this experience? Did it seem like WWE kind of figured it out and there was a good flow to the show? Or is it awkward, you know, when Bianca Belair comes out and then it's like, you know, 12 minutes later or 9 minutes later or whatever, her segment actually starts? Like, just talk about that part of being in the building.
So it wasn't – so last time they came, it was really bad. Like, they had, like, 12 to 15-minute breaks in between entrance and coming back to a break. This time, they kind of worked it out a little bit better. It wasn't as awkward. The only awkward time was when Sonya came out to the ring right after Bianca's match, and then they went to break. That was the only awkward time. You could tell Bianca and Sonya was kind of like – didn't know what to do for that long pause, but otherwise they actually moved it along pretty well for a change. Like I said, last time they came, it was terrible. I love how long some of those breaks were. This time it wasn't bad. It was, and they kind of tried to keep the crowd engaged. Like, they had like a DX cam and a John Cena cam, stuff like that. Like, it was a lot more engaging than previous times, like more so like kind of like AEW does in between their breaks, like when Justin Roberts talked to the crowd. Like, it was a lot more of that than just the pause in the dark and a video package. It wasn't as much as it was previous.
Robert, Grant, is there anything else you want to say about your experience tonight before we move on to some other people?
I'm trying to think. Oh, two more people that I forgot got good reactions. Seth Rollins got a really good reaction, and because people just love singing that theme. And Jerry King Lawler got a really big reaction, and I think it's just because he was a surprise.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else I have. I have wrote some stuff down. Oh, that 24/7 segment got an audible groan from the crowd.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The only other thing I remember writing down. People was asking, where was Rey Mysterio for the save of Dominik?
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all touched on that. I don't know if they said anything during the broadcast, but in the building, everybody was asking, like, okay, where's Rey?
They did mention Rhea Ripley is in protocol. They didn't specify COVID, but that is the vernacular these days. So it's possible Rhea was around, you know, was in protocol for being around somebody who tested positive, or he did. I mean,
okay.
I just read, I think Philadelphia is bringing back mask mandates in public. I mean, we're having a little bit of a return as people let their guard down. So maybe that's happening, but it could be something else too. It was, you know, Dominik took Rhea's place in that match. So him not coming out for the save did jump out to me too.
Oh, okay. That was one of the advertised matches I was talking about that we didn't get. Okay, so that's what happened. Rhea was in protocol because people were wondering, like, I thought this was supposed to be a tag title match.
Exactly, yeah. All right, Grant, thank you so much for calling up. It's great hearing from you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Call again. All right, very good. Let's move to Denny, who I believe was also on site, and then we also have Robert, who was on site tonight too. So we'll get some different perspectives here, and then from there we'll move on to it's a big night for Robert. I think we have another Robert and William and Ryan also on hold. Denny, thanks for calling up after the show tonight. Appreciate you taking time out after a busy night at Raw. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in and sharing some of your experience at the show tonight. I'm trying to keep the questions a bit original, although you heard Grant. So if there's anything that jumps out that either was different or you want to amplify or add details to, feel free as we go on here. My first question to you, though, is going to be, in 6 months or 2 years, what are you going to remember most about tonight's episode of Raw, attending it?
I think, you know, going in, you know, knowing it was kind of historic with that, you know, Cody's first match back on Raw, you know, I thought that was pretty cool. And then I thought that tag match between the Usos and the Street Profits was fantastic. I thought they did a really, really, really good job with that match. So those two things jump out. And then seeing Roman, you know, Roman came, when he came out, you know, he got a huge star reaction at the end after the show went off the air.
As you were on hold listening to at least part or all of Grant's call, was there anything that you were nodding along to or you wanted to add some detail to, or perhaps you have a different perspective on any of the topics we covered with him?
Yeah, I mean, I probably would have ranked the pops a little differently than he did. I do think, yeah, like the top four that he mentioned were real close, but I thought Roman's was the biggest by a lot. And then I would probably say Cody right behind him, and then Bianca right behind him. But he was absolutely on point that Bianca, I mean, anytime, before she even came out, they had kind of shown her in one of the video packages, and she got like a really big reaction during yeah, he was absolutely on point when it comes to Bianca. Like I agree, I think she's a huge megastar, and budding. I didn't see a lot of the I'm glad you said something about Rhea Ripley being in Protocol, because I thought that was supposed to be a women's tag match, so I was kind of confused why it turned into a singles. One thing I wanted to ask you guys, like, what was up with the Damian Priest thing? Like, everyone was very confused. Like, the match was going on, and then like, he knocked AJ outside, and then the lights just go out. He turns purple. He does this weird bite thing, and then it just ends. They didn't explain. This is a disqualification. This is a count out. This match is a no contest. Like, they didn't announce none of that in the arena, and everyone was just sitting there like, what the hell just happened? Did you guys have any explanation on TV, or...?
Danny, I have some bad news for you. No, they didn't. They went to a break as Priest was kneeling in the ring, and they came back, and we got a shot of them at ringside going, that was weird. Now let's move on. So we didn't get anything. Yeah.
So the announcers told exactly how we felt in the arena.
Yes. Well, they're getting paid to sit there and act confused. You guys paid money to see something and didn't see an outcome. And, you know, I mean, you should want an outcome. You invested in that match. It was two guys where you're, like, curious. Who's going to win here? This is a tough call if you're thinking about it in a booking sense. If you're just sort of a casual fan and you're kind of wrapped up in the moment, you want to know who's going to win, and they just took that away from you. So you can do it now and then, but you got to pick your spots. And then when you do, you should own it by addressing it. And the live audience should have been told, this has been declared officially a no contest due to blank. But they couldn't even be bothered to do that. So, yeah, I give a thumbs down to that decision.
Let
me throw it to you, Akko. Go ahead with more. I'll throw it to Robert after that. What else are you going to bring up?
I was just going to point out, and I think I told you in the email to tell everyone else, for me personally, it's also cool. Because we were actually at Cody's last match in AEW in Cleveland, the ladder match against Sammy, and then I've been telling my son, who's kind of a big Cody fan, and I was like, hey, we saw Cody's last match in AEW, now we get to see his first match back on Raw, for our family in particular, it's pretty cool to kind of be on both bookends of that, also, I'll say the first guy you talked to, he was 100% on point with the attendance. I'd say it's about 90% full. And we're coming back in June for Dynamite, and so I'm going to be curious to see how AEW fills up the exact same arena. This will be the first time that I've been in both the same arena, especially just a few months apart from each other, between, a WWE show and an AEW show.
Let me ask a follow-up on the Cody situation, because you went to both shows. What, his last AEW show and then his first Raw match, how is the audience different in a generic sense? And then how is the audience reacting differently to Cody? Do you have any sense of how many people are cheering him now who were booing him just a handful of, a week ago?
I don't, because the crowds are so different. It's WWE, there's a lot more families, a lot more smaller kids. But the AEW show you went to was a lot more, grown men. So it's hard to tell how many of those men were booing Cody then, because back in Cleveland in his last AEW show, he was getting like a 50-50 reaction. He was very much getting, 2007 John Cena vibes. Some people really, really into him. Some people really, really into booing him. And it was hard to tell if it was, him being booed because they were sick of him, or, some of the boneheaded booking decisions like the Anthony Ogogo, feud, or because Brandy kind of says some dumb stuff on TV. So, he gets some kind of, pushback of that. So it's hard to tell, how many of the people were booing him then that are now cheering him. But it's definitely overwhelmingly positive cheers now, as opposed to the 50-50 reaction that he got in his last match in AEW.
Robert, my co-host, Robert Bayo, go ahead with a question about experience.
Early on, I think it was after the Cody segment, they went right to the Dominic and Veer segment. Was there any reaction in the building to Veer, one way or the other, negative or a heel reaction, or was there any real response to him?
He got like a little reaction. There were some people that were just naturally booing him. There were some cheers like, oh, hey, Veer's finally here. And, knowing that he was here last week, but there was even a Veer is here sign. So he got a reaction that at the end of the match when he continued to beat on Dominic, there was more people booing him. But I mean, Dominic isn't the most sympathetic character, I don't think, in my opinion. So I think maybe if he was, maybe if it was Ray in that spot, there would have been more boos because more people are emotionally invested in Ray. But I feel like that reaction could have been more, but it was there, but it wasn't anything. There's nothing that jumps out to me that says, hey, this guy, watch out for this guy. He's a future.
And the Usos, were they advertised ahead of time for a dark match?
They were. And this is history for me, because this is the first time, and Wade, as long as I've been calling in and as long as I've been going to shows and I've been your live correspondent several times, this is the first time I've ever went to a WWE show where the locally advertised dark match was exactly what we got. The locally advertised dark match was Roman Reigns and the Usos against Drew McIntyre and the New Day. And I was telling my wife before, because we stopped and got some pizza on the way in, and I was telling her before, like, hey, this is what's advertised, but we never get it, so don't get too excited. Don't be shocked if Roman ain't here at all. Like, and then, like, during the show they announced Roman versus Drew, and I'm like, okay, well, Roman is here, and they're going to give us some form of what they advertised. Then they actually went through with the six-man, so. Yeah, first time I've ever went to a WWE show, and they gave me exactly, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, very, very big news here. A dark match that was advertised took place. Denny, I guess I think we've covered most between you and Grant in terms of not overlapping too much. Is there anything else that you want to add about your experience tonight? It can be even something before or after the show, too, not just what aired or what happened during Raw.
Well, on a personal level, like, these were birthday tickets for my wife. I told you that in my email too. So she's in the car with me right now. So it was a pretty cool surprise. It was kind of last minute, and I was like, oh, cool. I was pretty happy to be to be going to Raw tonight. And we've been going to a lot of WWE shows lately, and she's starting to get more and more into wrestling. Son's starting to get more and more into wrestling. These are more live shows that we go to, so it's a pretty cool family bonding event. And then after the show, the post show, I really did enjoy the Detroit Macho Man stuff that was that the previous caller had talked about, and the Paul Heyman trying to fight the Samoa Joe lookalike that he quote unquote said. It was a lot of fun, and I think the family had a lot of fun, and good fun night out for the family. We enjoyed the show.
Very cool. Well, Denny, be sure to thank your wife. That was a nice gift, and it led to a good caller.
Yeah.
So we appreciate you joining us tonight.
All right, cool. I'll let you know you know, maybe we can compare and contrast in June when I go see AEW. I'll email you closer to the day.
For sure, for sure. Thanks, Danny.
I appreciate it.
Yep. All right, so we're going to get to regular non-onsite calls momentarily. 347-215-8558 is the number, and push 1 when you call. But first we're going to go to our third and, I believe, final onsite correspondent who attended in Detroit tonight. Robert, it's going to get confusing with a Robert co-host and a Robert onsite correspondent. So everybody out there listening, be prepared for people talking over each other. Robert, our onsite correspondent, welcome.
Wade.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, dog?
Good to talk to you. I was kind of hoping you'd say, oh, just call me Bob, and then we'd have that all solved, but those weren't your first words. So,
no, dog,
but we're good.
WG, man.
All right. You want me to call you?
No, I'm Robert. Actually, you can call me Detroit Macho Man.
Cool. So you've had a chance to listen to some of our onsite correspondents. I'll throw to you first. Is there anything that just jumped out to you that we haven't covered that stood out to you on tonight's show? Anything you disagree with that you want to that you want to bring up, or anything you want to add to?
Not a whole lot I disagree with. One thing I heard was the attendance. I wouldn't quite say it was 90%. However, there was definitely some progress from the last time they were here. They moved into the third deck this time, so I mean there was still some blackout tarp up there, but you know, we're moving into the third deck, so there's progress being made.
That is progress. That is progress. So, what was different? You've attended WWE shows before.
This is my 215th.
Yeah, I asked that sarcastically. So, how was this crowd different in any way than maybe some more recent crowds in the past? What was there something about the way they're reacting to the product right now that stood out to you as having been to so many shows?
I don't know. I'd say tonight the crowd felt pretty hot to me. Although I say being down there in front like that is kind of a different animal than being anywhere else in the arena. But the crowd didn't feel like it ever really settled down that much. There was obviously some confusing moments, like with Damian Priest. And I don't know if it came across on TV as confusing, but I was wondering what happened to Rhea Ripley as well without any kind of announcement of why that tag match wasn't happening. I do have some personal anecdotes on the evening to share.
About
an hour into the show, I don't know if you noticed, but I went through a costume change because during the break they came over and told me I had to take my hat off and stop holding my signs up. It was too distracting.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Never. 200 and some shows, I've never heard that once.
Wow.
So they brought...
You were the guy in the white shirt then? Was that you?
I was the guy in the purple and silver Macho Man outfit.
Okay. Right, so there's a different guy that kept standing out on the entrance ramp that had some signs. That was what I thought was you.
No,
I did notice that guy.
Hard cam.
Yeah, so share some other anecdotes, Robert.
Let's see. The post-match, I mean, this is all about me here. I don't know what else to talk about. The dark match was awesome.
We saved you for last.
I'm kind of biased talking about it, but the dark match started with me because they wouldn't let me use my signs on TV, so I waited till the show was over and stuck my hat back on. I had a sign that said, the ones are number two with a poop emoji and a sign that said God mode, but it said get out of Detroit. And the New Day took the one sign and had Drew cut it in half with his sword. Xavier Woods took my hat and glasses and did the whole Macho Man routine in the ring and on the ring post. And Roman Reigns kind of walked over to me like he couldn't see, like he couldn't read my sign, well, get out of Detroit. And I was kind of teasing him along with it, trying to take it away from him as he would reach for it. And he grabbed it and went to the ring steps and ripped it in half. And that's how that match started.
Wow. Cool. Co-host Robert, is there anything you want to ask of our on-site correspondent, Robert?
Just a basic question on any on the merch movers. What was the most common shirt you saw out there?
Oh boy, I'm not really sure because where I was sitting, I couldn't really look around at the crowd that much. I would have to guess from the all the shows that I've been to, even last weekend. I was in Dallas for every event, including WrestleCon, and I would say the Bloodline stuff, you know, is probably most common, and I would have to say RKO is pretty, or RK-Bro rather, is pretty popular too.
Was there anything about tonight for WWE that seemed different or surprised you? You probably know what to expect, you know, given how much you've seen in person, in addition to on TV, and you told me you went to WrestleMania weekend too and have seen a lot. Is there anything that jumped out tonight as like, well, I wasn't expecting him or her to be that over or not over, or WWE did something that surprised you?
Nothing stands out, but I would say that Veer, I would say, got a pretty good, you know, at least from where I was sitting, it sounded like a pretty good heel reaction. Like the crowd reacted to him how they were supposed to.
Yeah.
I would say, I mean, as far as anything different that stands out, not necessarily. I mean, we said the Damian Priest thing was kind of odd, but I've seen plenty of odd things before. I can't think of too much that was really different. It did feel to me like it kept kind of flowing more. I don't know. I'm still kind of coming down off of a high a little bit of the show here coming out. And
oh, especially, yeah.
100 people asking me for pictures. I got to go. Wade's waiting for me. But but it felt to me like maybe I'm not remembering it right, but it felt like a lot of segments kind of flowed, you know, before and then back through commercial. Like the show never, to me, didn't feel like there was any hard cutoffs, save for the Damian Priest thing, obviously. It just, to me, it felt like it flowed. And I guess that is kind of different because sometimes the shows can feel kind of choppy where, you know, you get up and you're rooting for somebody in a hot segment, and then it just gets cut off, and then it comes back, and it's something totally different. And, you know, you might be sitting on your hands or something, but it just felt like, to me, from where I was at, it felt like high energy, and it just kept flowing through the show.
You saw Cody in person at WrestleMania, right?
I did.
Yeah, so was there any difference in the reaction to him debuting unannounced versus now that he's had WrestleMania, last week's Raw, and this week's, and now showing up this week, and now two ring entrances on one night? Is there diminishing returns? Does he seem more over? Is it just hard to compare?
I would say that it, at the very least, it's the same. If not, I don't think they have anything to worry about as far as going into week two of Cody here, because it felt like he was just as over, if not more. As far as, like, you know, biggest pops of the night, I would say he's up there, him and Roman, obviously, in the dark match. And I think that RK-Bro got a pretty good pop, too, because them coming out was unexpected. But we're talking about Cody here, and, I think he was just as over, if not more, than maybe even last, like, or just the same as last week, at least.
By the way, how do you feel about Cody? What's his potential? What's his trajectory over the next year or two in WWE?
You're talking to me, right?
Yeah. Off-site, Robert.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. Maybe you're a co-host here.
Right, Macho Man.
You know, I've seen a lot of wrestling, and I want to believe in my heart that it's, you know, we're going to go all the way with it, but I've seen a lot of stuff come and go. He could be the hot, shiny toy here for a minute, and I'm afraid if crowds turn on him, you know, Vince is going to be there telling him to take his shiny hat off. It's too distracting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if he's as invested as he was in Cena and Reigns and sticking it out in the midst of boos, but, you know, they can frame it as split crowds are good and, you know, pretend they're happy, even if they're fooling themselves.
Yeah, he seems to be the hot thing at the moment, which is true. Like you said, the split crowd thing, if that does come into play, I don't see Vince holding on as tight as Cena or Reigns with that.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, well, cool, Robert. I want to get to our other callers. Is there anything else you want to share before we switch to other callers.
Yeah, I do. One sign that I had that was going to show that they told me I couldn't hold my signs up was I had one that said Wade Keller is a Lions fan.
Oh man! Oh, that would have been nice. They blocked you from showing that, huh?
They stopped that. A whole bunch that I had ready to go, and that was one of them I was most excited about. So maybe I'll take a picture.
I would have been most excited about that one too. Yeah. So what? What else? What other company am I in besides them banning my name on a sign? Maybe they just, know I'm a Viking fan and they just don't want false information broadcast on national TV. But what other signs?
Yeah,
I root for, I'll say this. I root for them against the Bears and the Packers. So, you got that going for you.
Because you've used them as a non-threat. That's not a compliment.
I hardly even use myself to root for the Lions anymore.
You're correct. What other signs got censored?
Well, none of them got censored. It was just they made me stop holding them up. I had one that said the Lions are greater than the Miz.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the tweet by Cody either earlier today or the day before about selling out Little Caesars Arena and having a pizza party, but I made a sign that said Detroit Pizza Party with Cody Rhodes, and I had Little Caesars logos, like actual Little Caesars logos on them, and those are the only two signs I think that made TV, and it's like, hey, you got to stop holding these up. You're attracting too much attention. I had like seven to go.
Wow. All right, well, cool, Robert. Anything else?
Not really. I'm still sitting here in the parking lot waiting to get out of here.
Go sign autographs. Go.
Yeah. Well,
go sign more autographs.
Worth,
All right, cool. Well, Robert, glad you called in. Check in next time you go to a show if it works out for you.
Yeah, thank you for waiting for me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right, So we just talked to Robert, and we had a caller, Robert from Cleveland, who was on hold. It took us too long to get to him, understandably so. We're well over an hour into the show. He dropped off, so we did get to do a Robert with Robert and then another Robert. And we'd never done that before. I think we had like three Zachs in a row once.
I was going to say, you fit in Zach, a name that starts with a Z. You fit in like four Zachs on a show. I mean, come on.
We used to have more Zachs. I don't know what happens to, callers come and go, and I get that. But there was a time where it was like, we went into a show without like two Zach callers and two Zach emails. So Robert kind of, taking that mantle tonight, although Robert in Cleveland, he's probably got work tomorrow or something. So I understand you can't stay up forever and it's unusual to have three on-site correspondents, obviously, although it was kind of fun, getting three perspectives, the way that we did there. So anyway, all that said, I'm sure that our other callers are like, come on, stop yapping, get to us. So we'll do that. William in San Diego. Thank you for holding. We've covered a lot of topics, but you usually bring it. So what have you got for us tonight? What's it out on?
Well, I'm kind of sad to hear about the Robert train stopping here. I used to have a supervisor call Robert, just that can't for anything.
Oops, I didn't quite catch what you said there.
Oh, I just said that I used to have a supervisor called Robert, so I don't know if that counts for something.
Oh, I wish it could, but that's pushing it. I mean, I'll be the judge here and say that does not count.
Okay. All right. Well, I tried. I thought it was a pretty good show. I want to talk about the Liv Morgan match with Naomi. I'm kind of disappointed by the outcome, and, I'm not one of those fans that I think a lot of fans tend to overestimate just how, that she's ready for that main event, that she should be champion right now and they should be pushing her to the moon. I'm not quite there myself. I think that Becky feud exposed a lot of her weaknesses, and I think she still needs some work to be done. But I was pleasantly surprised when she won that match against Sasha, and I'm not opposed to them building her up. I do think that they need more women in that in their depths in the roster. And I mostly I was disappointed because I thought that the story they were going to tell was that, Liv beat Sasha last week and she was going to beat Naomi this week. And so heading into the tag match, you know, Liv had proved herself as, you know, being able to carry her own weight in the tag team, so that when they eventually lost that championship match, and you know, I think we can all see the writing in the wall that Ripley is going to be the one turning heel on her. It would kind of make Rhea Ripley even more of a heel, like if she turned on Liv after Liv already showed that, you know, she tried her best, that she was able to carry her own weight and defend herself for two shows straight without Rhea being there in her corner. And I just thought that was a pretty good story to tell. And I'm just kind of disappointed that they kind of threw some water on that, and they, you know, kind of cooled it off, and they just, you know, went to the standard 50-50 booking that they do a lot of times.
Yeah, good point. Did that jump out to you at all, Robert?
Yeah, it was certainly odd, but I think we have to judge it with a little bit of an eye towards what their original plans might have been for the evening. With Rhea being out, that might have changed things a little bit, and where they have to do a little more of kicking the can down the road. And I think I'm kind of with you, and I don't see it in Liv, but people certainly do. So myself and my analysis trying to reconcile that fact, and you do get the feeling is not only Rhea going to be the one turning heel out of this, but she's Liv is going to be the Marty out of this group, and I think it's painfully obvious at this point.
And that's fine. I mean, you know, not everybody's going to be exactly equal. Someone's going to be a bigger star than someone else. But yeah, I don't know that Liv's stock has gone up since the spotlight was on her. She's been given more opportunities. So anyway, back to you, William.
Yeah, what do you guys think about Kevin Owens gaslighting people, telling everyone that Ezekiel is Elias, when, you know, clearly, as Ezekiel has mentioned many times, he's Elias's younger brother?
I actually think Ezekiel has, and Elias both have, a slander suit that they could. I mean, Kevin, he has, you know, you got to believe people unless you have evidence that they're wrong. Adam Pearce is vouching for him, even though it's private, he can't prove it. And, I mean, I don't know what more proof he needs. Elias had a beard. Elias has a beard. And Ezekiel doesn't. I just don't know what more evidence you need. Maybe Ezekiel needs to play guitar poorly, and that would just solve it once and for all. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, well, this Ezekiel character, he needs a beard. You mentioned it on the VIP show a couple weeks ago. Some people are meant to have beards. Ezekiel's face hasn't quite tanned to the right proportion where you need a beard. And on a semi-serious note, it's got to be weird to be Kevin Owens. Like, you know, you kind of had, you know, the match of your lifetime getting to wrestle your childhood hero in the main event in WrestleMania. No. 2 weeks ago, you're in the middle of a whodunit trying to figure out if, like, this sort of a Scooby-Doo storyline of, are these two guys the same people? What a dissonance that must be in his brain.
It is. Yeah, we were thinking, oh, KO, does he get momentum coming out of the Austin thing even though he lost? He's claiming he was injured, and Austin goaded him into it, so he's got his heel excuses. And they could have just, you know, elevated, you know, used this momentum. I hate that I'm self-conscious when I say things like momentum and opportunity. It haunts me in regular day-to-day life, too. But, you know, there could have been some momentum there. And now he's just doing shtick with Ezekiel, so... I mean, it's, you know, KO's going to make, just like Sammy, KO's going to make anything he does entertaining. But it does sort of feel like it's too bad there wasn't the lay of the land didn't give him a better, more important thing to do after WrestleMania than this. Go ahead, William. What else do you got for us?
I do agree that, you know, it did seem like maybe they could have done something more with KO's potential, but at the same time, I this whole Ezekiel thing is kind of a pleasure, guilty pleasure for me at the moment, at the very least. So we'll see where it
goes.
Yes.
There's a lot of things in WWE that you either have to make it a guilty pleasure or you're just going to be miserable. And fortunately, some of the guilty pleasures are genuinely entertaining. So.
Yeah, exactly. you guys kind of touched on the segment, the reaction to the segment at least, but what do you guys think about Sonya being the next contender for that women's championship? You know, I think that's a good opponent for like a B-level pay-per-view. The only kind of problem I had is like with the whole Pierce and Sonya dynamic. To me, it's kind of weird that Pierce is still surprised by how Sonya keeps like abusing her power, and that there's still like friction, and they like, because it seems like they keep going back and forth between working together, being buddy buddies, being like coworkers that are like friendly and nice to each other, and then other weeks, you know, Sonya's back to her usual self of undermining Pierce's authority and doing stuff like this, and Madame Pierce is supposed to act surprised, like this is the first time she's done something like that, and then the next week they'll drop that dynamic and they'll just keep going back and forth. So that's the only part that I'm disappointed in. But for the actual match itself, I think it's a pretty good call.
Yeah, I was thinking that early in the show. Like, we're just back to, you know, like, I don't know. It's just week to week, month to month, there's not a lot of consistency or integrity to how those two interact. And it makes Adam Pearce look – actually, Adam Pearce is pretty consistent. So it's Sonya who's not, and then it makes Adam Pearce look foolish for not – you know, it's just disconnected, you know, one sort of story arc with Sonya to the next. I am just fine with her getting in the ring and being, like you said, a B-level challenger for Belair, especially under these circumstances. Like, she didn't earn it, but she had the power to do it because she, you know, sort of tricked Bianca into agreeing to the open challenge. And then they went from there. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I would like a stronger opponent for this title defense for Bianca, just because I know it wasn't her first time winning the title, but it was kind of one of those momentous title victories, and I think Bianca is still fresh enough that you would try to get her a stronger opponent for her first real defense. With that said, even as Sonya was naming off some of the names, I didn't really feel like there was one that really stood out as who it should be that she faced right now. So from that perspective, I guess I'm okay with it. And as you said, it's one of the more logical ways of a person who doesn't earn a title shot actually getting one in the company. I think I'm more just over the dynamic that you guys are talking about, and you know, kind of the way she was presented in the feud with Naomi. I just don't know that we necessarily need this, or this is the best direction. I feel like whenever these things happen, you know, a few months later, we're wondering how come that character's not as over as they were when, you know, when their title match happened. I think often it's that first opponent that usually sets that stage.
All right, very good. William, anything else for us?
Yeah, this is kind of a two-parter. Do you think that with Austin Theory changing or sharing the ring with Austin at WrestleMania, did that seal his fate for losing that first thing? Was that like a moment where prior to then Vince never realized that he shared like a last date with, or he had a similar name to Steve Austin, and then that was like an aha moment for him, and he had to drop it. He made the decision there and then that Austin Theory had to drop that first lane. And kind of a more serious note, I do feel like Austin Theory has some momentum from that. I'm speaking of momentum. And, you know, Finn Balor, he's kind of been losing consistently to Austin Theory. Do you think, I don't know, what do you guys give, what do you guys think Austin Theory's chances are at capturing that U.S. title?
It took us a while to get used to not saying Matt Riddle. It's going to take us a while to get used to not saying Austin Theory if they stick with him just being Theory. Yeah, Robert, I guess I'll throw it to you, your thoughts on the kind of two-prong question there.
I was thinking about it throughout WrestleMania weekend. Like, how the hell has Vince not realized that he's got two Austins on the same show? Like, you know, we know that you couldn't have Shane McMahon and Shane Helms on the same show. So I was kind of confused about that. Just kind of like amazing that hadn't happened. And maybe when he reacted like it was the glass breaking to Austin Theory's music, maybe that was the moment for him that the light bulb finally clicked and realized he had to drop it. Ultimately, I think this will be one of the least offensive ways of doing this because they at least acknowledge his name is Austin Theory, but he's going to go by Theory. Usually, like, you know, the guy's just on TV next week, and now they're going, you know, they're going by Rude or whatever it is that they are going by. I'd say he has a fairly decent chance right now against Finn Balor. They're doing nothing with Finn. You know, didn't have him on WrestleMania. He's just not really existent right now. And clearly they have big plans for Austin Theory. And it's somebody that they actually genuinely have big plans for. They usually don't do as much stopping and stalling. So I'm fairly confident that he's gonna take the belt from him.
I do too. I think they're more invested in Theory right now than Balor. I mean, not that Balor doesn't have something, you know, more to give and that they're going to take advantage of it. But I think mostly right now Vince is into Austin Theory and he wants to get something out of him. You know, we'll find out how. I mean, you say, oh, hi, how high is he on Theory at this point? I think he's high enough to put him in a program with him, but he also isn't overdoing it. Because you got to prove yourself to Vince, and Theory's track record isn't super long, especially not on the main roster. But I think he's performing well. You know, he's a good athlete. He bumps well. He's got a distinctive look. He's really good at facial expressions. You know, he has the body type and just enough height that Vince McMahon likes. So I think he's got a bright future, and I think they're going to take their time with him. Beating Finn Balor is a sign of confidence if they do that, and I think they're heading that direction. William, anything else?
Yeah, I guess I'll go back to the main event. Do you guys think that maybe the Street Profits are going to be like they're going to play a part in like maybe making it so like they don't unify the belts? Like maybe they interfere and they do like a DQ finish or something because they do seem to be having like more of an edge. Maybe acting like a little bit more heelish in recent weeks. And they do kind of seem like they had a bit of a chip on their shoulder that, you know, the Usos came out and tried to cut in line, as they said. When, you know, I think you can make the case that the Street Profits do deserve that one-on-one match because they beat RK-Bro like the week prior before. Or they beat Alpha Academy someone. They beat someone like the week prior before RK-Bro won those titles.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out. I mean, it is if they want an escape hatch or they want to, you know, not unify the belts but have a storyline spring from it, they could go a lot of different ways. What do you think, Robert?
I'm leaning towards the belts being unified. I lean towards them more being the first opponent. And so they're, if they're thinking about this ahead of time, I think they're putting a little bit of an edge on there because you need a little bit of that edge, I think, when you're feuding with the Bloodline and feuding with the Usos. I think it works out a little bit better in that direction. So that's kind of where I'm leaning that they're going. But, again, I wouldn't rule it out, as you said, for the escape hatch where no one actually has to take a pin.
I was such not a fan of certain aspects of the presentation of the Street Profits. I thought they were just too kind of cartoonish and over the top, which I know this is WWE, but I some people benefit from that and it doesn't limit what they can do, but I like more of an edge and a more serious tone with Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins, and it's early and it might be very circumstantial and temporary, and so I'm kind of holding out hope that this brings them to another level, however we feel about, you know, that they're just in the role that they're in out of convenience as sort of a third wheel because they had to find a way to wedge them onto a show. But can this lead to them actually being more interesting characters who grow from that initial presentation? And I'm hopeful of that. And I think, you know, especially Montez Ford is a potential big-time star for WWE. I talked about this on my video on YouTube at WrestleMania weekend. By the way, go to our PW Torch YouTube page if you haven't yet and check out daily updates from Zach Hadorn and Tyler Sage and some other cool stuff, including their weekly fireside chat. And I put a video up talking about my WrestleMania lineup. If I had used all the same wrestlers but could not use any of the same matches, could I construct a card having second choice on everything and that would compete with what WWE presented? And I thought Montez, and the match I put him in, was meant to kind of make him a bigger star. So people can watch that on YouTube if you want. And so I think it's time to start thinking about that and make sure that he doesn't get sort of pigeonholed or typecast as, you know, a guy who's just sort of happy-go-lucky goofing off and spewing catchphrases, and there just seems to be this one dimension and no depth to him. So I'm hoping we're headed that direction, but we'll see. William, back to you. Anything else?
Yeah, my last question. I called last week about this too, but I'm wondering if you guys, if you had like any way you guys changed your mind or had any other thoughts. I made the argument that I wasn't too sure about MVP splitting up from Bobby Lashley because I just, you know, I think it takes something away from Lashley, and I just don't think that Lashley is that good on the mic on his own. I think he can be okay, but it's not like I've ever seen like a great Bobby Lashley promo. It's, you know, in all fairness to him, he hasn't had that many chances to prove that, but I do think that tonight wasn't tonight didn't like prove me wrong. I do think he didn't like crash and burn or anything, but it was kind of, you know, a little iffy there for a few moments, and that's kind of my worry with him. Like, I think that Omos definitely needs MVP, but you're kind of sacrificing a great act in the process, which is, you know, that MVP and Bobby Lashley pairing that they had.
Robert, your thoughts on that? We haven't spent much time on Bobby Lashley yet, and what do you think of him going it alone and showing fire and playing off of MVP? Because people have said, you know, MVP was important for Lashley's act, and it's going to be tough without him for Lashley to carry things. Well, he's still with MVP currently, not long-term, but he's still playing off of him, and there is a chemistry with those two.
Yeah, I thought tonight was kind of a tale of two different promos. I thought when he was out there and getting the wet chance and just out there kind of talking to the air, it was not going well. I feel like once it was more in that conflict setting, going back and forth with MVP, it ticked up. It wasn't perfect, but I thought it was much better. And I think it's really difficult to figure out where the MVP, where he kind of fits in. So of the two of them, of Omos and Lashley, who needs a mouthpiece, if that is your binary choice, obviously it's Omos that needs that mouthpiece a little more than Lashley. But it's not just that Lashley needs someone to talk for him, which he absolutely did, but the act and the character really fit well with MVP.
Yep.
And so taking that away, it's not just about the speaking part of it. I mean, we saw it, the reverse of it with Brock Lesnar. Like, Brock Lesnar had to sort of turn into a different character when he wasn't the Paul Heyman guy. And this version of that, I think they have to be very careful. And I think they have to pick their spots. Like I said, it was kind of two parts of a promo tonight, parts of it that were pretty good and parts of it that weren't very good. So speaking of Heyman, you got to hide the weaknesses and accentuate the strength. So the biggest piece of advice, if anyone is looking for it, is don't give Lashley that much mic time. But I don't have a ton of confidence of him away from MVP, and just because I think that act was so good together. I mean, it got over to the fact where, you know, you're winning titles at WrestleMania because of that act. So been very hesitant ever since this all went down last week.
I thought Lashley was good tonight, though. You know, like, I mean, he's come a long ways on the mic.
He has, but there's still something that's very script reading about him that really comes across. And I just don't know if even when you hear him in actual interviews and speaking, it's just kind of his cadence and stuff. And as I said, it wasn't bad, but it got better when the intensity got turned up, which is hard in WWE because there's a lot of times where you're speaking to a lot of very sterile environments. And I think that can be kind of dicey.
Yeah. All right, William, anything else you want to close with?
No, that's all I had. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Cool, great. Good to hear from you. Thanks. All right. We'll do one more call here and then wrap up with a couple quick emails. Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Welcome. Usually have three topics for us, if that's true. Start with number one. Or no, actually start with number two. It's your choice.
Number one's on Veer. You see him possibly getting a handicap match against Rey Mysterio and Dominic because he dominated that match pretty easily tonight.
Yes, I think that. And, I mean, how would you feel about them, Robert, sacrificing not only Dominic but Rey and Dominic to Veer? Is that fine, or would you have – did it kind of work out where Rey wasn't there? But if he's healthy and can, you know, we don't know what's going on with him, but if he's healthy and can work, would you rather have Rey be competitive with Veer, and how are you feeling about Veer at this point?
Yeah, I mean, like, so I think it starts with Dominic because they've weakened Dominic more in the last couple of weeks. It's almost seemingly specifically for this Veer program. But if anyone's going to feud with Rey Mysterio, it shouldn't be a squash. Rey has that status and is still pretty darn good at what he does that I think he can be valuable to you in that way. So I don't like anybody squashing Mysterio. Now, the 2-on-1, I think that's a pretty foregone conclusion that's going to happen at some point. I'm not too big on Veer so far. Not that he's necessarily bad out there, but I think he's just generic, outdated WWE monster character. He's better than Almas. We'll probably get less chances than Almas gets, but there's nothing out there that really, really sticks out. But, I mean, there was a point where I said that about a guy like Rusev and parts of that act picked up. So I can still reserve judgment, but so far I'm just kind of nonplussed by the whole thing.
When I watched Veer tonight, I was thinking Sheik Adnan El Casey. When I was a kid, he was in the AWA and he came in and was made scary faces and destroyed opponents, held his octopus finisher, his kind of abdominal stretch while pulling up on the leg too long. Officials had to ring the bell over and over and tear him apart. It just felt old school and it's been done before. He went on to be General Adnan in WWE, but I think that Adnan did a better job than Veer is. There's something about Veer that feels a little put on, maybe quite a bit put on. I don't know if his facial expressions are genuinely menacing more so than someone who looks like he's playing a role and he's meant to be menacing, but I'm not buying it yet. And just sort of the grunting and I don't know. I was open-minded to this. I would have been happier if he came in as sort of an ass-kicking babyface minus some of the tropes of pro wrestling's past. And if he was really good at this, maybe it would be easier to take, but he's not bad, but it's not convincing and it's early, so we'll see. I don't want to hedge too much, but I'm not confident right now that all the hype has paid off in something that doesn't feel one-dimensional and out of date at this point. Anyway, Ryan, back to you for your next point.
My next question is on Cody Rhodes and the storyline of him trying to fulfill the American dream. Do you see Goldust or Brandy getting involved in the storyline in the future? I know Goldust is under contract, but have you heard anything about what his contract status is when that comes due, or if WWE would be interested in bringing in Brandy for the storyline?
I'm sorry, Randy who? I just missed that. I heard Goldust.
Brandy Rhodes, his wife.
Oh, Brandy. No wonder I'm confused. Okay. I don't know what Brandy's potential is. I mean, I think Cody's better off if they don't do that. A small sampling from people in WWE indicate they think it's better for Cody if she's not brought in as part of the act. But it's a complicated, dynamic with Cody and his wife and WWE and all that. So I don't think so. I just honestly don't think Brandy has put together a resume that would justify shooting her onto the main roster as a wrestler. And I don't think Cody wants to be a heel, and I don't think she can be with him as a babyface. So I just don't see it working. If she, went to NXT, put in the time and didn't act like she deserved a leg up on anyone else and it would all be on merit and she got better, that's a totally different story, but that's also not short term. I don't think Dustin Rhodes coming in. I mean, Dustin and Cody aren't like super tight. They're brothers. They love each other. They have, they're not like estranged or anything, but they're not like just super close and all that similar people. And Dustin's in a good spot in AEW. I do not at all expect him to follow Cody into WWE. I would probably consider 3/4 of AEW's roster more likely to go to WWE than his older brother, Dustin, to be honest. Robert, any thoughts on that?
I think with Dustin, it would probably be a case if he was available. Yeah, they'll bring him in, to do something. But as you said, he's settled into a nice spot in that, that mentor trainer role as well, as getting a little bit of TV time. Yeah, I would not, I would not have Brandy around. The best you could do is maybe like on the night he wins the title, then they're having the big celebration with the family and she comes in. I think that's fine. But even that might be risky. You know, that was an element of him falling out of favor in AEW was her presence there. Now, if there is any chance of backlash, that is where it is going to go. And sometimes the backlash on that stuff can be a little short-sighted. With Brandy, it wasn't. I think though the backlash was genuine. It was for good reason. She wasn't that good, and she was being pushed kind of way beyond where she should have been. She made other members of the McMahon family look very, very deserving of their spot whenever she was in there. So I would steer clear of Brandy as much as you can, just to not create headway that doesn't need to be there.
Ryan, anything else for us?
My final question is on Dre the King Lawler. Do you think his performance last night will result in him getting more announcing gigs on Raw? And based on also I heard some of the callers say that he got a pretty good reaction tonight. So I don't know if that will influence WWE's decision and them thinking he's too old to be on camera.
Jerry just looks like Jerry Lawler still. I mean, and he sounds like Jerry Lawler still. He's still Jerry. I don't think he's interested in a full-time gig, and I don't think the current WWE product is crying out for, Jerry's consistent. He's not vintage Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler as a performer, as a heel and a babyface in Memphis and in AWA, and I mean, he was so good. I mean, one of the most effective and entertaining promos in all of pro wrestling history. As often the case, I think the WWF version of him, well, great, sort of like with Bobby Heenan and Ted DiBiase and so many others, which just was less in WWE than the best work came prior to that. That said, he's a legend. He's been around a lot. I do not think that tonight's Jerry Lawler is something that anyone is watching going, boy, we'd like that every week. I just don't think that's where WWE is right now. And I think Jerry doesn't want to sit there for 3 hours, doing plays on words and bad jokes at this point. I mean, maybe he does, but I don't think WWE wants that. What do you think, Robert? What do you think of him tonight?
Well, I thought he was rather anonymous tonight. There were stretches where I forgot he was on the commentary, and occasionally he would chime in on something like but to your point, like if this was his audition to do that, he wasn't going at it very hard. And I do think they gotta be aware of some things. If you know, most things don't stick to them the way they would to other companies. But it might raise a little bit of flags having, you know, with some of the other ways you try to present your company, and then having Jerry Lawler as one of the public faces. I know they'll claim they kind of don't care about that thing, but it is a little risky and probably not worth the reward. He's probably good in the role that he has to get the pop. He's gonna get that pop in most places that he goes. But if you just watch his performances, like on the kickoff shows, like he doesn't have that fastball anymore to bring out some of that wit. It's more of the popsicle stick humor at this point, and it's not very good at that.
That's a good term for it. All right, Ryan, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. All right, like I said, we'll do a couple quick emails here. We have a Wade, a VIP member from New Zealand. Two Roberts, two Wades, no Zachs. Hi, Wade and Robert. I don't lead a life that gives me enough time to watch NXT. And so my main exposure to Ciampa is through PW Torch Podcast. From what I've seen, he seems to speak well and wrestle very well. Today, he didn't look undersized next to Ezekiel, and who's in parentheses, he says, definitely not Elias, and Kevin Owens. Yet podcast hosts don't seem to think he has much of a chance of being a big deal on the main roster. What is it about him that you two think will hold him back in the eyes of the decision makers? Cheers, fellas. It is a good topic, Robert. Why not? Why not Tommaso? If AJ and Ezekiel and KO at their size, why not Tommaso?
I think I laid out earlier there's a few things working against him. Again, it's not just about the age. It's about how old you look. I think that's a factor as well. And you know, Vince likes Austin Theory for a reason. And I know one of your co-hosts in the past had said the benefit of that Randy Orton has right now is that he still looks like Randy Orton. So cosmetically, not just from a size perspective, but then just, but purely a look perspective, I don't think that's necessarily what they're looking for. And he, while he does look menacing as like a person, he's not over the top menacing the way someone like in the past, like a Yokozuna could have been. And I think the biggest thing of probably why is because I think the decisions have probably already been made on him a while ago. As I kind of joked earlier, this is kind of the third time he'd been called up to Raw. Now there was a lot of other extenuating circumstances in the other instances, but I think the die is kind of cast with him. And thirdly, as I mentioned earlier, he's from that era of NXT where we're not seeing a lot of people successful from that era. Even the people that are successful from NXT are kind of from the era prior to right now. So I just kind of don't see it happening. And I know you wanted me to make the case for it, but I just couldn't.
I am hopeful, and I don't think there's a great reason that at age 36, I mean, he's got a lot of mileage and, you know, health concerns, but I don't know. I think there's a chance he'll win Vince McMahon and company over and end up improving upon how he's initially being framed. And I don't think it's decisive right now that he's not going to be featured better than he has been so far. Part of it is Vince wants to know, what are you? You know, who are you? What are you? What's your thing? And that didn't matter as much in the NXT TakeOver era. You can be DIY, Johnny Gargano, a hard worker, a good wrestler with some indie fame and win that crowd over. I think Vince is trying to figure out who Tommaso Ciampa is. And if he figures something out that isn't just lower card, you know, I still think there's a chance for him to have a good run. And I hope he does because his matches are really good. All right. So we had a JB. We had two Roberts, and we had two Wades, and now we have a second JB. So we'll go to this JB. He says, Wade, hope all is well. I returned to watching Raw out of curiosity around Cody, and at the risk of being that guy, I'm already worried 9 days into the run that within 3 weeks, Cody's going to be just another guy. I think a big part of the reason Brock and Roman are head and shoulders the guys is because they are seen as being too valuable to wrestle and throw away quarter three meaningless matches stretched over 40 minutes to fill time. It is exceedingly rare when they wrestle on TV, and thus when they do, it feels big. My friends say it's his first match in 6 years, and I'm just being cynical, but I think if WWE strings together a few of these, the mystique drops considerably for Cody. Do you think this was too soon, and 6 months ago, do you see Cody closer to Roman or to Miz in terms of star power? Yeah, I mean, I didn't think they were going to bring Cody in and not have him be a workhorse on TV. You know, he did it with the TNT title, but Cody, you know, talked at the media Q&A after Mania. You know, he's got a lot of mileage on that body. He started very young. He's had injuries. And, you know, I can't remember exactly what he joked. You know, he's 35 going on 50 or something in terms of his body. And he's addressed again whether he even wants to wrestle past age 40. He had to kind of cover for himself because he somewhat indelicately put it before. I don't want to be one of those old guys who hangs on past age 40 and looks bad in the ring. He's like, oh, but there's a lot of 40-somethings who are great. You know, he had to kind of cover for that. But he has said, you know, that he didn't want to wrestle beyond 40, but he didn't rule it out at this point because a lot of people say that, and then they get to 38 and 39, and they see the money they're making, and they wonder what they're going to do next. But I don't think Cody's going to be at a Roman Brock level. You know, I his ring work and his promos are in a different category, and I think they're going to expect him to wrestle and bring his star power to Raw to fill segments. His interviews are probably going to be longer than they should be, and his matches are probably going to be more common and longer than they should be until there's diminishing returns. I think Vince McMahon thinks there's interest in him. I don't know if Vince fully is able to gauge how big of a deal Cody is or isn't, because he doesn't pay close attention to AEW, but he knows, you know, there's a lot of social media buzz about him. So I just think we're kind of in a phase where Vince is trying to figure out, you know, can I ride Cody week to week in matches and segments and draw some ratings and have him be sort of more like Seth Rollins in that, you know, you see him wrestle a lot on TV. Randy Orton is, the most tenured veteran. He's wrestling a lot on TV. I don't think there's anything that defines Cody down by doing that from everyone on the roster other than Brock and Roman and Ronda, you know. So, and I just don't think that's where Cody is, and I don't think he'll get there as being at that level. You know, he might redefine something in between Seth and Roman and Brock and get there, but that's the highest end for him that I think is the least bit realistic. So, Robert, your thoughts on what JB had to say there?
Yeah, I never really perceived Cody as being a guy that was going to be a special attraction necessarily. And he said as much early on when he came in. So I didn't perceive him to be a guy that would only wrestle on pay-per-views. And while I will agree that is a big reason why guys like Roman and Brock are over, there have been people in the past that have been very over that have wrestled regularly. It's just in this current landscape that gives those guys a real, real big advantage. And you mentioned it, you go back and read the old newsletters that you wrote, Wade, and you talk about, you know, that was a way to kind of cover up for what Hogan couldn't do by not having him on TV wrestling all the time. At the same time, Rock and Austin were in tag matches every week on Monday Night Raw. One of them had a broken neck. So there's a few different ways to do this. I think it only runs the risk if the matches are booked to not suit Cody. That's when it would run that risk. If he's going against the same opponents every week, that would obviously run a risk. If he's having really bad matches that are a little too long, that would run a risk. Those things can run a risk, but those things aren't necessarily unique to Cody in any way. Like, some guys can be a little bit immune from it, like a Seth Rollins, as you mentioned, even to a lesser degree, a guy like Dolph Ziggler, where it's like, yeah, you know, put him in a match. That's what he does, his matches. Cody's at a little bit different space. I do think Miz is a good comp for him. I think they will think higher of him. And, like, him winning the title will mean more than any Miz title victory could ever mean, because it's mostly been played for comedy. But I do think that is generally a good comp for him, just a higher level of that.
Yeah. And I mean, if you say closer to Roman or Miz, I'm sort of like, how about a triangle? Because he'll be – there's more Roman in him than Miz as an act who is capable – of being a serious person who headlines than Miz currently is, even though Miz has had some main event runs. They've been sort of like, you expect it to be temporary. But from a money standpoint, I mean, you know, Miz and Cody are both making a lot of money right now, and Roman's making a lot more than either of them. So I'd just say more of a triangle and in between, and a little bit closer to Miz in some ways and a little closer to Roman in others, but sort of in a category unto himself that maybe ultimately is a little closer to Drew and Seth than either Roman or Miz.
That wrestler doesn't exist nowadays, though. I was thinking about that as you're mentioning it. It's kind of why it's hard to mention, because, like, there's almost no serious, you know, upper mid-carders. None of them to really be taken seriously. That role doesn't necessarily exist. Going back to the emailer, it is Roman and Brock that are the serious guys. That's why they're in that position there is. We haven't really had in recent times someone like Cody who's more of a character guy. I think maybe Orton would be the closest comp, who's more of a character guy who's right near the top of the card but isn't one of the chosen guys. That character doesn't really exist. When guys get to that level, guys like a Seth Rollins, they're usually the super wrestler guys. So this is kind of new territory if that's what he ends up hitting.
All right, up next, JB says, quick thought as well that I never thought I would be excited to see a child get beaten up by a grown man, but shamefully, Dominic versus Veer brought it out of me. Dominic is just in no way fit for TV. Dated reference, but he reminds me of the guy billed as the teenage heartthrob Chaz, who used to come to the ring on ESPN GWF in 1992, pale as a ghost with a poorly cut mullet, a peach fuzz mustache, and droopy tights, as Craig Johnson, oh, Craig, he was wonderful, yelled about the bored-looking fans losing their mind for the hot young prospect. That is a great reference. It's like early 90s, 3 p.m. on ESPN, Joe Pedicino's Global Wrestling Federation, which is best known for launching the careers of Buff Bagwell. And what was his name, Robert? The Anonymous Stranger? What was he? The he wore a mask and was like a mystery god. I don't know. But also, that's where Lightning Kid, Sean Waltman, really shined with Jerry Lynn. And the Patriot, Del Wilkes, got his start. Not a start, because he was the trooper in the AWA, the trooper Del Wilkes for a while, with the late DJ Peterson. So, yeah, all kinds of fun dated references there. But I went back to the early 80s with Sheik Adnan, so we can go back to the early 90s with the teenage heartthrob Chaz. I hadn't thought of Craig Johnson in years, and Chaz I haven't thought of in decades. Anyway, on the flip side, Veer looked like one of those off-brand wrestling action figures you'd see in the 80s from a toy maker without licensing rights with a name like Nord the Mauler or something. He's different, though, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they can get out of him. Thanks, Byron Buxton, for MVP, and go VIP. Thank you, JV. Yeah, it was funny. I was watching Veer thinking, not that your analogy is better than mine, or comparison, JV, of Nord the Mauler with an unlicensed toy maker from the 80s. That's perfect. He totally looks like that. You pegged it. You nailed it. I was just thinking he looked like somebody who would be pushed as a top heel on an indie promotion that had obscure cable clearance. And he'd be the guy acting that way and wrestling that way who would be either the champion or sort of the top heel. But I like totally what you said. The license-free 1980s generic wrestler who doesn't exist named Nord the Mauler. You got it. Robert, anything you want to add to that?
So my son has a wrestling game on his iPad that's like got every character possible, but they have weird names. Like there's like Riddy Peeper or something. I mean, it's like, it's that ridiculous. And I was thinking, yeah, I think a Veer would fit right into there. Or as you said, is like the guy that, that the baby face you actually know of that is in Asset territory all the time comes in and has the big match with, on the television. He's very dated. And I think that's what we were getting at earlier, is that it's all wrestling tropes. With him, and nothing that actually means anything, though. There's not even really a reason to hate him. And as you're saying, going back a little further on the email with Dominic Mysterio, he's stuck in whatever rut that Ronda Rousey is also in. He's in the same exact rut of, he kind of went above their pay grade when we first saw him, and then now you're just realizing that they're not very experienced at this, and and need to kind of go to the back of the line because they lack those basic skills. And for someone like Dominic, that's kind of unfortunate, because the way he was pushed out of the beginning, it's almost like he can't go back to the beginning. He just had to progress from where he's at. So while he did get, you know, the luck of having his dad be who he was and getting on TV very quickly, in the long term, it may turn out to be a major disservice.
All right, we will end appropriately, Robert, with a Zach. Zach in Texas. Gentlemen, Raw is in very serious trouble. I said Roman unifying the titles would be hugely detrimental, and now Raw has no champion, and Roman's challenger is on SmackDown. On top of that, they're on the path to take the tag belts off of Raw's most popular act. That leaves Cody as a centerpiece of Raw, and they're well on their way to sabotaging him. Even though it's improvement from the high school knockoff version of his AEW entrance from last week's show, he lost his elevator tonight. WWE used Cody to make fun of their own ridiculous vocabulary. They literally had him bring attention to the fact that he can't say shit anymore. How does that help anyone? Most importantly, he got stuck with The Miz tonight. That's the same Miz WWE's presented as an ineffectual, annoying joke. That's not a good start. On top of that, he's officially on the road to feuding with Seth Rollins until SummerSlam, just like I predicted. Oh, and was he already getting Cody Sucks chance? It's already starting to feel like Vince sees Cody as just another guy, which means Raw is going to be a wasteland before long. All right, Robert, I did not hear Cody Sucks chance. We had 3 Onside correspondents who did not mention that. Did you hear that?
No, that might be a little confirmation bias there.
Zach. Yes, perhaps Zach. But maybe not. You know, give us a timestamp or a moment, and I'll listen for it. That is a negative, but not, you know, like, wildly out there interpretation of what we've seen with Cody. I'm not, you know, a fan of the meta stuff. I already kind of complained about that at the top of the show, or near the top of the show. I'm not as down on Cody, you know, having interaction with Miz and beating him. I think that's fine for TV. In fact, I think people should be relieved that Cody's first feud isn't a SummerSlam feud with Miz that started tonight. You know, that I wouldn't have ruled that out. So, and I mean, things move slowly. I'm not sure Cody Seth is gonna still be happening at SummerSlam, by the way. But anyway, Robert, anything you want to specifically address that Zach brought up?
It's a lot of the stuff that we addressed earlier, so I don't think there's a ton to go on. I do think the point of it, to my unification theory is, if they continue this where they take the titles away from Raw, that would be a bit of an issue, but that's not something I can really see happening long term. My thought is, I mean, if you're really thinking this out, is the Usos as a main event tag team can be kind of the centerpiece of Raw and keeping that storyline going. So, you know, you don't have to have the Doomsday scenario necessarily in that case.
Yep. All right. Robert, anything else from Raw you want to bring up before we sign off?
No, I think with our 3 on-site correspondents, we kind of got to literally every segment there, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's an interesting time on Raw after WrestleMania, and we had a lot of good stuff to talk about. So I appreciate it. Good having you on a show where I'm hosting again, and we'll do this again in not too long, I hope.
Looking forward to it, I said before I was on mute.
I was going to say, what happened? You lasted this long, and you can't make it the last
time. I had a great take there. It just it's lost the time forever.
All right, very good. Thanks to Zach, JB, and JB, Robert, and Robert, Wade, and Wade, and all the rest. And we'll talk to you next time.